Welcome to the Across the Sky podcast. I'm Kirsten Lang in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I'm joined by my colleagues across the country, Joe Martucci in Atlantic City, Matt Holliner in the Chicago area, and Sean Sublett in Richmond, Virginia. And today we're talking about health and weather, which is something we really haven't done much of yet here on the podcast. But more specifically, it's a mental syndrome called seasonal affective disorder, or SAD, as some may call it. And we have on a behavioral health specialist today that I actually spoke with last year about this exact topic. She works for the Essential Medical Group in Oklahoma, and she focuses on behavioral health. And guys, I know that you have heard of it, and you know, if you haven't exactly heard of the official term of seasonal affective disorder, I think it's something that maybe we're all kind of familiar with. And when we were talking with her, she kind of went into the details between, or the specifics between SAD and the winter blues. And so, you know, it's something that, you know, maybe some of us have dealt with winter blues. I know I have. And, you know, as we go on, you'll listen to kind of the specifics of it. But, you know, when it gets cold, you get kind of sleepy. Or I shouldn't say cold, when it gets cloudy. I think you get kind of sleepy, and you hear the term a lot. People will say, or not term, but you hear the phrase a lot, the weather's affecting me today, or maybe it's the weather. And I think there's something to that.
I really think there is, because there is something about, you know, and during the winter, being in Chicago now, there are more cloudy days in the winter than there are in the summertime. And there's something about a cold, cloudy day. I mean, especially if it's a cold rain. We've talked about this before. If it's a cold rain coming down, then you're really motivated to stay inside. But even if it's just cloudy and dry outside, but it's cold, there is a difference between a cold day when the sun is out and a cold day when it's cloudy. Because it makes, you know, already a shorter day in the winter even shorter, because it's already darker. So it's, you don't even see the sun rise or set if it's completely overcast. And I just am just less motivated to, I mean, certainly go out and about, but like there's something about it. You're so tempted, just kind of like, you want to have one of those days where you just kind of sit on the couch and watch TV. If the sun is out, you feel like, maybe I'm missing out on something. But when it's cloudy, it's like, I don't think anything's going on outside. I'm just going to stay in. So there is, the weather definitely has an impact on our mood. It absolutely does.
I agree with that 100%, because I feel like I'm more productive in the winter. Because once it starts getting, like, the sun's out, it's in the 70s, it's in the 80s, I almost feel like guilty just sitting inside, especially when it's like in, you know, it's not that humid out and you're just inside and, you know, it's sunny out, you want to be out. Sometimes I'll take my computer out and work, but, you know, I don't know if I've ever really had like winter blues, except for maybe like two winters when I used to work overnight shifts. So when you have overnight shifts, then you have a lack of sunlight, it's like you went nocturnal for, like, you know, in my case, like a month, because you would be a month on overnight and then a month not on overnight. And that month was tough, you know, but, you know, it is a real thing that impacts people. And we're happy to have Jasmine on to chat about it.
Yeah, it was really good to get some basics from her and understand some of the key differences between just a blasé day or two versus something that's a more legitimate, you know, psychological condition. So really good having her on, Kirsten.
Yeah, I agree. All right, well, we will be back after the break with Jasmine talking a little bit more about seasonal affective disorder. Stay with us. Welcome back. So we are joined now by Jasmine Wilson. She is a licensed clinical social worker and the behavioral health manager for Ascension Medical Group in Oklahoma, where her focus has been working with adolescents and adults who are coping with adversity and then those experiencing crisis. She also provides clinical oversight to the behavioral health team. And today she's here to bring her expertise on behavioral health and how it may or may not be affected by the weather. Jasmine, we're welcome. We're so glad that you could join us today.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
So let's just go ahead and jump into it. We wanted to talk today about a topic that I'm sure many people are maybe familiar with, but maybe, you know, they're familiar with the topic, but they don't necessarily know the clinical name, which is seasonal affective disorder. Can you just tell us briefly a little bit about what that means exactly?
Absolutely. So seasonal affective disorder, or more commonly known as SAD, is actually a diagnosis that is a subset of major depressive disorder. So all of the components that are required to have a major depressive disorder are required for seasonal affective disorder, The only difference between those two diagnoses is with SAD, it is very much related to the season. So it needs to have at least five of the diagnostic criteria. It needs, those symptoms need to recur every day for 2 weeks, and it needs to happen for two consecutive seasons. Now, when we talk about what does that season look like, a typical seasonal affective disorder tends to start in October and end somewhere around March. So it tends to be during our winter solstice time. That's the most common one. And the diagnostic criteria that is required is little interest or pleasure in doing things, lack of motivation, feeling down, depressed, or hopeless, trouble falling asleep or staying asleep, or sometimes sleeping too much, or to the other extreme, too little, feeling tired or having little energy, or to the other extreme, feeling very manic or hypomanic, poor appetite or overeating, feeling bad about yourself or just down about your family or who you are, trouble concentrating or paying attention, lack of focus, and then thoughts that you would be better off dead or that you could go to sleep and not wake up or hurting yourself. So that's the diagnostic criteria, and you have to have five of those in order to meet that diagnostic criteria. And then again, for the SAD part of it, it's the seasonal aspect.
Hi, Jasmine, it's Sean in Richmond. One of the things I noticed with myself once I left Virginia and went to Pennsylvania for school, for college, I noticed that it was a lot cloudier during the winter versus the winters in Virginia, which tend to be sunnier. So it makes kind of intuitive sense that during the winter it's darker, and that plays into the diagnosis and behavioral changes. Is there any information out there to suggest that an increasingly cloudy winter is different than a sunny winter, since we're talking about light and incoming and, you know, vitamin D and that whole bit? Anything in the literature there?
So that's a really interesting question, because the cause is relatively unknown. That's sort of the million-dollar question, is what causes both depression, as in major depression, and then also seasonal depression. But the cause is kind of different than the trigger, right? So we're not really sure. There's some undetermined information about what the cause is. Of course, with SAD, we've really only had this diagnosis since the mid-80s. So it's understandable that we don't know a whole lot about it, because it just hasn't had nearly as much time to be researched. But we do know that a trigger is the reduction of natural light and how that affects our circadian rhythm. So as you indicated, you know, when you get up towards more like further away from the latitude, when you get up more in the north, people tend to have, or at least present with, a higher amount of SAD than people who live in the lower hemispheres and have more sunlight during the winter.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to the regional difference, because for 3 years, as I've mentioned on this podcast before, I was in the Rio Grande Valley in deep south Texas. And now I'm in Chicago, and I can tell you that winter is a totally different animal in Chicago compared to south Texas, and where I grew up in San Antonio even. You know, the days just so much more shorter. And again, also like Sean alluded to, a lot more cloudy days as well. So not only are the days shorter, but it gets even darker because of the cloud cover. What I'm curious about, though, is does seasonal affective disorder, if you develop that, does that make long-term depression more likely? It may just start out as a seasonal thing, but could transition into something more long-term? Or does that happen at all? Or is there a percentage of cases that then transition into long-form, like regular depression, rather than just a seasonal aspect? Do you have any numbers on that?
Sure. So seasonal affective disorder is considered to be SAD only when it is recurrent within a particular season. and that has to be within two consecutive seasons. If you experience it through other times throughout the year and it's not associated with the season, then it sort of transitions just into depressive disorder. So even though SAD is a subset of MDD, it has some very specific diagnostic criteria to stay within that sort of realm of what we would consider to be the diagnostic criteria for just the seasonal affective.
Hey, Jasmine, so let me ask you this. So, you know, you said the further north you are, the more likely, I believe you said, to get SAD. And I get that there's less daylight, but I'm wondering, and I don't, do we know, is it more of a function of how little daylight there is or more of a function of how widely the swings are in daylight? Like, is there something to be said about going from like 5 hours of daylight to 20 hours of daylight in the course of a year? Do we know anything about that?
So, yeah. So the prevalence of somebody who is in maybe Alaska or New Hampshire is about 9% of people report SAD, as to where if you're in Florida, it's about 1% of people. So there's a marked difference in those two. And with the knowledge that the trigger would be that reduction of light. So if you go from, you know, 12 hours a day of having sunlight on Friday before daylight savings time, and then you come back on Monday, and now you only have 7 hours of daylight, that's going to have a real impact on the amount of natural light that you receive and the amount and how that's going to impact your making of melatonin, how that's going to impact your circadian rhythm.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Jasmine, thank you. And then we'll be back on the other side of this break with more on seasonal affective disorder and Jasmine Wilson. Stay with us. All right, welcome back to the Across the Sky podcast. I'm Kirsten Lang in Tulsa, Oklahoma, joined by Sean Sublett, Matt Holliner, Joe Martucci, if you're just now joining us. And we are talking with Jasmine Wilson, and we're discussing today seasonal affective disorder, where you're getting down into kind of your health and the weather and how, you know, the weather may impact your health. So Jasmine, you've been talking with us about what SAD or seasonal affective disorder is. You know, if someone who's been listening to this thinks this may be something that is affecting me, you know, this something, you know, comes around every fall or so, and I really seem to struggle with this, what are some recommendations that you have as far as treatment when it comes to this?
Sure. So let me go over just a couple of risk factors, because there are some people who have a higher prevalence of reporting SAD. And the biggest one is females. Females are about twice as likely to report having SAD as men, which also sort of correlates with the numbers of women who report just a depressive disorder with men. Young adults, 18 to 30, tend to have a higher prevalence. Of course, we've already discussed if you live in a northern latitude, you're more likely to identify and present with some SAD criteria. And then if there's a family history of depressive disorders, you may be more likely to develop SAD. So those are some risk factors for people who, you know, may fall into those categories. And we want to be careful to differentiate, because there are winter blues, and many of us experience lower moods, more fluctuating moods in the winter, and we just call them winter blues. And that's a little bit different than a diagnostic criteria that would fall under SAD. So if you feel like you might meet the criteria for SAD, the best thing to do is to go and speak with a doctor or a mental health professional that can give you some parameters for what that might look like. So you want to make sure that you're getting the proper diagnosis so that you can get the proper treatment. So the treatment that is considered to be best practices are light therapy, antidepressants, and cognitive behavior therapy.
And Jasmine, coming back to comparing seasonal affective disorder to the winter blues, as you mentioned, because I think that's an important distinction, because a lot of people talk about, oh, it's so depressing outside, but that may just be winter blues. So what is the distinction? What can you use to separate if you're just experiencing the winter blues from actual seasonal affective disorder?
Good question. So the winter blues is considered to be fatigue, just general tiredness, especially in the evenings. And then there's kind of that after the holiday slump that we all kind of go through. You know, anecdotally, there's not a lot of hard evidence or studies that show this, but anecdotally, people will generally tell you, you know, even if they experience depression or sad, the holidays and the expectations of the holidays sort of carry them through December. So January and February tend to be harder months for us, just from a mental health perspective. So if you're experiencing fatigue, if you're experiencing some slight, just general kind of feeling down or feeling tired, that is typically more in line with what we would consider to be just kind of the winter blues. When you start experiencing it chronically, recurrently, every day, it's hard for you to find motivation. You start to maybe isolate or separate yourself, stop enjoying activities that you would normally enjoy. That tends to be kind of that move over into more of a characteristic of it being a potentially diagnostic criteria for SAD.
All right, so Jasmine, I want to throw something at you here. So my own mother, she says she loves winter. She loves when it gets dark at 4:30. She loves when the temperature is zero. She said zero is her favorite temperature. She loves the snow. She gets happier in December. So can you explain that for me so I can explain it to her maybe when I talk to her later?
Well, good for her. That's what I have to say.
All right, perfect. I'll let her know. Good for her. She's always said it. Her favorite day is the winter solstice. In fact, my sister, her and I, we watched this one cartoon. I don't even know if you call it a cartoon. It's called Little Bear. She always liked it because we used to watch it when we were kids. So she, you know, we get together. It's a family moment for us. We watched the winter solstice episode of Little Bear on the winter solstice. So
there is another side to SAD. Now, most of the studies, most of the research goes into the winter seasonal affective disorder just because it tends to be more common. There are people who experience summer seasonal affective disorder. Now, it's a lot smaller population, so there's a lot less known about that particular side. But there is a case to be made for people who do maybe experience a slump in the summertime, and it's believed to be related to heat. So the winter is associated with lack of sun, which obviously we wouldn't consider that in the summertime because we have plenty of sun and natural light in the summertime, but it's the heat that tends to send people into the seasonal affective disorder. At least that's what that's what research is saying now.
So is there a difference then between, let's see, would there be the summer blues? Because I'll tell you, I used to love the summer, but we've talked about this on our podcast before. Summer now that I have 3 children that are all under the age of 5, summer is my least favorite season. And I don't think there's blues going with it in my certain situation, but maybe the heat and you're like sweating and the kids are running around and you're just trying to lather them up with sunscreen. But, you know, is there a difference between just kind of having a summer blues maybe and then having a, you know, summer seasonal affective disorder?
You know, I don't know that there's enough research right now to be able to say that there's a summer blues, although I'm sure you'll find many moms that are in your situation that can align with you and say, yes, I experience very similar situations in the summer. It's hectic, it's hot, maybe not the most fun time to try to chase 3 small children.
Yeah, so going back to what Joe was talking about in terms of how some people just love the winter and others cannot stand it, and we talked about the lack of light as being one of the factors here. Can you shed some proverbial light on this stat, which is, I don't know how true it is, but I've heard anecdotally through several stories that alcohol use during the winter goes up a lot in these higher latitude locations, well, Wisconsin, Scandinavia, Alaska. Is there some data to suggest there's some correlation there with mood and winter and alcohol use, or is that just kind of the old wives' tale, so to speak?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There is some information out there that suggests that there are comorbidities or multiple disorders going on at the same time, and they tend to kind of play on each other a little bit, right? One feeds the other. Substance use is one that is strongly correlated with SAD, as well as bipolar, as well as some eating disorders.
And Jasmine, again, this might be something where there just hasn't been enough research done yet, but I'm wondering, you know, we were talking about, you know, what exactly causes it. And I wonder, in the process of trying to figure out, has there been any research done on the amount of precipitation during the winter? So if it's been a particularly snowy winter versus a less snowy winter, does the amount of seasonal affective disorder go up or down? Or is that just something there's just not enough research on right now?
The biggest trigger that is believed to be the cause of SAD right now is the natural light, as far as how that is affected by snow or cloudy days or gray days or all of those things. You know, it's really just comes down to the lack of natural light that is happening within our daily activities.
So you mentioned before that light therapy was something that could help with that. Do you think, yes, obviously natural light is something you need, but you think that light therapy, like a light box, is something that really does help in these situations?
So research shows that it does. However, we have to be a little bit careful about how we recommend that, because it's not FDA approved. And so to tell somebody, oh yeah, just go on one of those online stores and get yourself a light box and self-medicate, you know, there can be some danger to that, because you need a certain amount of lux and you need it for a certain amount of time. And so if you read the guidelines on one of those light boxes that you buy, it'll tell you, you know, anywhere from 2,500 to 10,000 lux for anywhere from 30 to 60 minutes. I mean, those are pretty big differences when you consider, you know, how much benefit you're going to get from that. So it's really helpful if you're going to try to engage in light therapy to get somebody who is familiar with that and can kind of help you to regulate that and modify it as needed, right? Because the kind of the goal of any type of intervention is you start at the four, so the least amount that you need, and then you titrate up or you move up through that. So you may start with 30 minutes and you may see some benefit, and then you may need to go up some more. So it's important to have somebody to kind of monitor that for you, because it can also have some interactions with some other lifestyle choices that you're making or medications that you're taking. But the general kind of thought process with light therapy is you get your light box and you set it up and you use it first thing in the morning. So it's simulating sort of that dawn effect for you, that morning light that sort of causes our system to wake up. And you use it for, you know, 30 to 60 minutes, which is a big time frame difference, which is why you kind of need that support. But you do it while you're doing something else. So you're not just sitting in front of a light box. You exercise, or you get ready, or read, or, you know, whatever you do in the mornings to sort of have that dawn effect. But then you're also doing the things that you would normally be doing while you're waking up in the morning.
And then, Jasmine, following up on that, one thing I've heard, and I'm glad you're here to kind of sort this out, because lots of things get thrown around on the internet, and you wonder, is this really true? Is this really helpful? And one of the things I've seen recommended during the wintertime to compensate for the reduced amount of sunlight that you see during the winter months is to take vitamin D supplements. And that can help compensate for the lack of vitamin D that you naturally get through sunlight. So is that a recommendation that you would make to everyone, or maybe just people who are being affected by seasonal affective disorder, or maybe don't need it at all? It doesn't really help.
There's not a lot of research that shows that vitamin D is going to have the benefit it's going to be substantial enough to really be considered kind of a recommended treatment. So that would be something that you may discuss with your healthcare professional. That may be something that's recommended for you. But of course, that's something that has to kind of go through the medical channels, because you don't want to be adding supplements and extra things to your lifestyle if you're taking other medications or if you have certain lifestyle choices. You just want to be safe about whatever you're choosing to add as a treatment, right? Because you want it to support you, not cause adverse effects.
Jasmine, thank you so much. We really enjoyed having you on today. And this was a lot of information that I'm sure is very helpful for a lot of people, myself included. So I really appreciate you shedding some light on what seasonal affective disorder is and how it may, you know, be impacting some people here across the country. So thank you.
Thank you for having me.
All right, we'll be right back after this break. You know, really interesting stuff, I think, that Jasmine has to say. And I want to say the thing that I thought was maybe the most interesting from all of this, because, you know, seasonal affective disorder, winter blues, those are things we've heard of. But the fact that some people actually experience a seasonal affective disorder for the summer was kind of not really a you know, a little pivot there that I was expecting this conversation to take. I was kind of surprised to hear that, but it's obviously it occurs because, you know, they're gathering data on it and there's been research on it and, you know, people are coming in with that kind of issue. So it's just kind of an interesting turn to take with the whole topic.
Yeah. And I think I'm a great example because I have lived in the Deep South and now I've lived up north, Chicago versus Texas. And I can tell you that I don't look forward to the summer in Texas. I used to not. I mean, as a kid, yeah, you get the time off from school, so there was always that aspect of it. But temperature-wise, especially once I was out of school and I still had to go to work, like I looked forward to summer days less because I knew how hot and uncomfortable and humid it was going to be. So I really, but now that I live in Chicago, it is the absolute opposite. I love summer here. It's so nice. But I feel like people who've never lived, if you've only lived in the North or only lived in the South, you just don't know the comparison, like how bad winter gets up north and how bad summer gets in the South, and how you really don't look forward to the summer if you live in the South because it is so uncomfortable outside. And yes, it gets cold in the winter, but not oppressively cold. And you do get some breaks from the cold if you're in the South. It can warm up and feel better. So that's what I like that she brought up. That it's called not just winter affective disorder. It's called seasonal affective disorder for a reason because, yes, most often in the winter, but it can happen in the summer too.
Yeah, I didn't know that about the summer. I really just thought it was a wintertime thing. But it was interesting to have her on. I'm glad she answered the question about my mom. I'm going to let her know that she said good for her. Or if my mom's listening, thank you for listening, Ma. I hope you enjoyed the shout out there. But, you know, it's I like the different, like the light therapy, I'm always so intrigued by it because you hear about it and how well it works. I've never seen one with my own two eyes. I've never used one. I don't even know if I know anybody that's used one. But it would be interesting just to see if you use it for a couple of weeks during December or January. Like, do you feel better? Because sometimes, like, you just don't know what you don't know. Like you, the way that I can think about this, I thought about this actually yesterday, is like, you know, if you live in the North and you go to, like, Florida in like February for a week, and as soon as you step out of the airport, you're like, wow, this is great. Like, that's how you kind of feel like a lot of the time in the spring and maybe in the summer, depending on where you are in the North. I wonder if light therapy gives you like that same kind of like feeling. I don't know. I never experienced it, but if anybody listening is using one, let me know.
No, but I think that point is very well taken, because I know this about myself, and this is probably age as well. Once we set the clocks back in the fall and it gets dark, quote unquote, earlier because we change the clocks, my mood goes down in a hurry. It's like, oh my heavens, it's dark already. It's 6 o'clock. I want to go to bed. And it takes in that whole month of November until we get into the holidays where there's kind of, quote, you know, a kind of a reason to be excited. It's hard. Now we kind of turned the corner here in January, where the days start to slowly get longer, but unquestionably, I've noticed that it is harder to wake up in the morning when it is dark. It's harder to kind of get yourself going. I mean, we have a dog now, so we have to get up in the morning. But yeah, there's no question. It gets into your head.
You know, go ahead, Matt. Sorry.
I've got to follow up. Is your mom's favorite temperature really 0 degrees? 0 degrees?
You want me to call her now?
I don't know anybody who really enjoys 0 degree weather. Maybe 32, but zero, that just hurts.
She loves zero. She used to say, give me zero. And I'd say, Ma, it really doesn't get to zero where we grew up in New Jersey, you know, but she didn't care. So yeah, I don't know. She wants to retire to Vermont.
Well, it sounds like she'd be better off in Alaska. I mean, she seems like really like winter. Well, go to Alaska. We've had
Maybe. It's
that whole
possible.
podcast episode on winters in Alaska. It's like, maybe she'd be happy there.
Well, we did one, didn't we? We had our
Brian.
yeah. Shout out Brian Bretschneider, our podcast with him about winters. I think it was a whole year in Alaska, right? Didn't we just talk about the whole year?
Yeah, because we're talking about how weird summers are there with the sun angles and things like that.
Yeah. I forgot what I was going to say to your comments, Sean. So, oh, I know what it was. You know, I think I actually get more anxiety in the days leading up to the clocks going back than actually when it goes back. Because I'm like, oh, my God, it's going to get dark again at like 4:30, 4:45. And, you know, you're living and it's still like a little light at 5:45 in the last days of October. And then once it happens, I feel like now I'm like in the groove, like I'm used to it.
Yeah.
So that goes back to like, I wonder if like you don't, because you're in it, you don't know how you really feel sometimes like with this. And again, using that Florida example, you know, you walk out like, wow, this is great. But for now, you know, you're in the cold and you're just kind of dealing with it. I don't know.
Yeah, you do adjust. Like leading up to it and then the first couple weeks after the time change and suddenly it's getting dark so early, you do make an adjustment. Then you like expect it. When there's such a sudden shift from one day to the other, then it's like, oh my gosh, what happened? But then you just like, yeah, it's getting dark. Getting dark earlier, but I do like once you get into about February, then you start to notice like, wait a minute, it is staying light out a little bit longer. There's hope. Winter may end, especially up here in Chicago. You start to get a little bit excited until another big cold shot hits in March, and then you go, oh no, winter isn't over yet.
All right, and Sean, if you want to tell us a little bit too about what we can expect with our next guest coming on, kind of just transitioning right on into the heat there.
Yeah, so next week we have Andrew Dessler coming on. He's a professor at Texas A&M. He is a well-respected climate scientist there in Aggieland. Sorry, friends at Hickam Horns. This is A&M this time. But it's very well known that 2023 was the warmest year on record globally, probably the warmest in the last 100,000 years, when we go back and look at paleo climate records. So he's going to walk us through that. What does that mean? There was a lot of racket about how much warmer it was this year compared to 22, 21, 20. So we'll talk about some of that as well and how we kind of see the science going forward in terms of how much more warming we could expect in the years to decades to come. So that's Andrew Dessler from Texas A&M next week.
All right. Well, looking forward to it. Thanks again for joining us this week with our Across the Sky podcast. We are glad you're here. Have a wonderful week ahead, and we will look forward to talking with you next time.